to just say a little bit about your meditation. Just say something very simple, could be one sentence, my meditation is like, or something that happened tonight that stood out, or could even be, you know, my question about my meditation is, or my question about meditation is. Anybody have something like that? Yeah, Bill.
I had things that resembled a lot of deja vus and the memory of that of the last 3-4 nights I've been dreaming, but I can't quite get it, and it almost came back again, and it got me to thinking about that. Yeah, it's
like kind of on the edge here.
Image.
Yeah. Anybody else? How was your meditation?
I've had images of people that I associate with, like I think about them and I have some conflict in myself because something bad happened to them, or in my daily life I have conflict with them. I don't have conflict with them, but I get conflicted feelings when I am around them.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they come in meditation and there's a feeling of warmth and sort of love towards them.
Yes. Yes, the conflicted feeling that I have inside when I'm around others has everything to do with them and nothing to do with me. It's a fundamental thing. You got to just put that in your pocket and run with it. Could be the other way around. It could be that the person that you have conflicted feelings with, it has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with you. That gets a little bit spookier. Chances are it's a kind of a mix. Something that other people are carrying, that they're working through, that they're feeling. And there's things that I am aware of, or mine personally, so to speak, that these things kind of come up together. You see? It's an interesting area. Interface of humans with other humans. Anybody else? Anything else on your meditation?
I felt a lot of mental activity settling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was a couple of different times where that happened in a more noticeable way. And then there was a fullness that came after that.
Okay. Like a feeling of fullness?
Yeah, almost like sensations of fullness. Mm.
Let's go with that first a little bit and then maybe work our way back to the other areas. So, when a human meditates, when they first begin to meditate, most human beings, however that comes to be, and you might think back when you first were interested in meditation, what was that all about, if you can remember? Maybe it wasn't all that long ago, or maybe it was many years ago, when you first were interested in meditation, read about it, or went to practice it. Even if you didn't know what you were doing, you were drawn to something there. And most human beings, when they start out meditating, what they're actually trying to do is get a handle on themselves. They're trying to get a sort of a handle on their life. They're trying to kind of almost train themselves. Another word for train would be shape themselves. Shaping or training your mind is like shaping or training your body. If you work out, you can shape your body. And so for some people, I remember when I was a fitness instructor, the most important thing to most people to shape was what they called the love handles. What can I do about these? You know, and I always had something to say, at least I thought I did, that would be useful. So I would say, well, there's this machine over here that you get on and you twist like this. And it's ridiculous. If you've ever seen one of these things, it's like this disc, and your legs are going back and forth, and your upper body's going like this, and this is supposed to make these things smaller. So I'd watch these people sometimes, and, you know, I'm in a hypnotic trance as much as they are. See, they think that I know what I'm talking about. And I act like I do, and then I say, you know, there's another one we can do. It's like this. And basically what the person's going to get out of this one is they're going to get a stretch. So we're going to do this for about 15, 20 times back. I never saw anybody's love handles get smaller. Some people would say, put the, there was this little thing that could measure your fat. You know, you never know those things? Little like pliers, you know, you put them there. 4 millimeters or 3 millimeters. It's like, try the pincher on me. They'd come up to me. I'm a fitness instructor, right? This is before you needed to be licensed for these kinds of things. Now you have to be licensed and certified and levels of certification to be a fitness trainer. Put the pinchers on me. Check it out. And I was so inclined to want to cheat. You know, if it was 4 on their chart, I'd want to say, Bob, guess what? It's 3.7. You know, it's working. So here he is, here she is. I'm going to train myself. What we often don't realize when we're training ourselves is that, yeah, you can move things around, like the furniture in this room. You can move it around. It's not really going to fundamentally change the room. You can sit in a different spot. It's not going to fundamentally change the room. In fact, it's really not going to change the room at all. You ever notice that? I mean, it freshens up your room to change your paintings. I had a friend who was always rotating his paintings. You know, he'd come in his house and he'd move them around. He'd move that over here and then another one over here and say, oh, yes, fresh view. Nice view. And then that last one, and you'll change it again. You're not fundamentally changing yourself when you're training or shaping yourself, whether that be your body or your mind. You're moving the ingredients around. It's like if you're making bread and you put the ingredients in, okay, and you're working on the batter, okay, and you're working it into the shape you want. Are you fundamentally changing what's there? Or are you just moving around the ingredients? Now you bake it. Did you fundamentally change it? Or did you just heat it up? Made it edible. Did you fundamentally change it? This isn't even quite tackling the question of the you that you might be trying to shape or train. So, it's fine to try to get rid of your love handles, or stretch your hamstrings, or get in better cardiovascular shape, or even if you have the means, you know, and you want to, you know, have a facelift. And your face will look different. Or why not have a butt lift? How about that? Can get that one? Lift the butt? Anybody ever ask the butt, do you want to be lifted? Here we go. Whoosh, you know, or something else that you want to change around. So it feels different, so it looks different. Not to judge it, but very surface. Very surface exploration, isn't it? Very surface application. Very surface influence. We're very, very deep critters. Very, very deep beings. And if we want to recognize that depth, we need to be interested in something more than training or shaping myself differently. If you've ever meditated, and whether there was time was set, you know, that you were going to meditate for a half hour or 20 minutes or 45 minutes or 50 minutes, and you felt at some point during that meditation a kind of a pull that was towards not wanting to stop. Anybody in this room ever experienced that? Mm-hmm. It's like, you're in a something and it's like you don't want to stop. Okay, what that's about is that the truth, or as you put it out, fulfillment, because the truth in recognition really, in realization of truth is fulfillment. It's freedom. Call it realization. Call it awakening. Call it release from seeking. Call it rest. Call it peace. Call it home. Call it source. Call it anything you want. But when there's this kind of, and it often feels good to the human, there's this pull. You can't quite say where it's coming from, but you recognize that it's there, where you don't want to stop what you're doing. And I'm not talking about like you're eating food and you're full. You're full, okay? Admit it. And you want to keep eating. That's different. That's a different pull. That's not what I'm talking about. That's called suffering if you keep going. This is really good. I don't know what's going on down here, but this is really good upstairs. And this is connected to this, but I don't know about that. There's a line right up here. It keeps these two apart. Oh, what did I do? I don't feel so good. It's not what I'm talking about. The pull of truth, the pull of fulfillment, the pull of happiness. You can even call it the pull of relief. Yeah, because sometimes one's not experiencing one's life as undisturbed. Now, watch this for a moment. Let's do this together. Without any fanfare, anything special, just recognize right now the possibility of resting into a space that's completely undisturbed. Don't go looking for it. Just recognize that it's already here. Now, if you go, I don't know whether that's it or not. I mean, he said, rest into being undisturbed. I'm not sure whether what I just experienced or what I'm experiencing is that. That which sees that thought, that movement, I don't know whether this is it. That which sees that is undisturbed. See that. Just see that which sees everything. There's another way of saying awareness is undisturbed. Okay? Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, can you sense? Could use that word. Can you sense undisturbedness? I mean, if you want to place it somewhere, just take your left hand and put it somewhere and don't do anything with it for a while. Let it just sit there and then notice that it's undisturbed. Or your foot. You can do it with the body part. If I'm busy training myself and shaping myself and cultivating myself into different things, I might miss the possibility that I could rest in undisturbance right now. And that in fact, my nature, yeah, what I really am, if I don't move away from that, is fulfilled already. So it's a bit of a roundabout to think I'm going to train myself and shape myself into fulfillment. Because in classic Buddhist psychology, which is the most sophisticated, the most sophisticated psychology on the planet is Buddhist psychology. And I mean sophisticated not so much in its understanding of development of the child, because it doesn't have anything about that. It's sophisticated in its psychology of the mind. And the subtlety of the examination of the nature of the mind. There's nothing like it on the planet.
What is psychology?
Huh?
What kind of psychology?
Buddhist psychology. Yeah, Buddhist.
Okay.
Yeah, Buddhist. Buddhist. Buddha psychology. The psychology that came up around the teachings of the Buddha. So the Buddha laid out a certain amount of that, and then other people who were deep observers, yeah, deep observers, they cultivated this psychology. Three things. Train, shape, liberate. Train, shape, liberate. The reason why people want to get their love handles down, or their butts up, or whatever, is because through that training and shaping, that conditioning, that if I train and shape, I will be better off. Which means a watered down and sometimes severely watered down version of I will be freer. I will be better. I will be happier. and sometimes even I will be liberated. Although you don't hear this at most fitness centers. When you shape and train, you will become liberated. But mindfulness, you can see the ads now that say, mindful dentistry. Compassionate, caring for your cat. And the letters are getting bigger, and the word compassion and mindfulness are getting more and more and more frequent. There's this huge study going on at the University of Wisconsin in Madison right now that's studying meditation in really, really deep detail with all kinds of equipment, all kinds of money. They got $1 million or $2 from the NIH to do this because some people do not recognize that meditation is wholesome and effective for training, shaping, and liberating the human being. They need scientific data. And watch in our lifetime, because it may just happen, that psychiatrists and psychologists will be recommending courses of meditation instead of Prozac. To people like you and me, or maybe our children, or maybe, if not our children, our children's children. It's coming. It's a wave and it's unstoppable. Why? Because every human being wants liberation from suffering. And the shaping of my love handles, lo and behold, is that in disguise. Give me liberation through a shaped love handle, please. Or a tuck tush. Whatever it takes. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh at my own jokes too much. It's a beginning, right? If you're afraid to be yourself in front of other people, be yourself in the mirror and see if you can get yourself to laugh. And if you can do that, take it out and try it on somebody else. And it could be a flop, or it could be an opening. And you trust that it's okay to be you in public. So the liberating aspect of meditation, that's what's pulling me when I'm sitting here interested in continuing. And by the way, that's what's pushing me before I feel the pull of the truth. Guess what? Right back here in my tush or my backside, I feel pushed by the truth. I don't necessarily recognize this. I don't see that the push of the truth is there saying, here's why you want to meditate. I can't talk to you in words, the truth says, in ways that you're going to be able to necessarily understand in your brain. But I'm going to push you until I start to pull you. It's a big, big, important turn in the life experience where the drive and the push and the seeking and the looking and the craving and the grasping, all in the name of what? Happiness. Liberation. Check it out. What are we doing in Libya right now? And I don't mean we as NATO. I mean any we. That's us, all of us. What are we doing? So, sometimes something really insightful, maybe more than most of us recognize, comes across the boob tube. Why is it the boob tube? Because the boobs are watching it? Because it's a tube that's a boob? Forget it. The television. I'm watching Independent Lens last night. I don't know whether you saw this, but it's the show about a woman who escapes the Congo. She should have died 6 times over. She's so close. She gets her family out of there. Her family is huge. Her husband is killed. She has seen such tragedy. She travels the world right now. She speaks at the United Nations. She's been to the White House. She's beautiful. I can't remember her name. Just beautiful. Her truth, her power, her strength, her liberation. And what she does is just works for refugees worldwide. So the story I want to tell is very short, very simple. And it's about forgiveness. She's in the death camp. Now, if you just study the history of the Congo in the last, just take 100 years, it's just unbelievable what's happened there. She's in the death camp. Her children are in the death camp. Her husband is killed. So because they killed her husband, some kind of crazy ritual has it that the next person in that family that needs to die is the oldest son. And you're all going to sit here and watch this. So they come to her and they tell her, you know, because of da 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 da, we're going to kill your son. So bring him out. We're going to kill your son. And she's like, is there anything that I can say that will make this not happen? The guy goes, actually, yeah. Give me your daughter. Give me your daughter and I won't kill your son. So what does the mother do? What would you do? She goes and gets the daughter. And she brings the daughter out. And they're sitting there and she tells the daughter what's going down. He wants you for what? We don't know. But it's not hard to guess, right? And he won't kill your brother if you will sacrifice yourself. You know what the daughter did? She said, okay. So he doesn't kill the son. He rapes the daughter. And then what do they do, the family? They take the baby and love it completely and forgive him. Because she says to her children, if you don't forgive those who have hurt you or killed your father, then you're just like them. And she works the whole family. We live in Phoenix, Arizona right now. Got like, just like kids running all over the place. It's a big clan. This woman is world renowned. You can look her up if you want to. She's probably the most famous person to ever come out of the Congo. How did she release herself? How did she liberate herself? By forgiving. I'm sitting there watching this show and I'm thinking, what? Now, this is what the mind does sometimes, right? What do you have to be bothered by, Paul? Get it into perspective. What are you worried about? What are you bothered by? What are you upset by? And if we're not careful, the mind can get a little judgmental in there and say, well, my problems don't matter because look at this perspective. Look at the depth of that forgiveness. Husband's never coming back. She finally gets one of her daughters back. They got separated for 14 years. Her daughter ends up in Rwanda. Finally ends up in Kenya. And finally gets her daughter back. If you could have seen just the meeting at the airport and the way they embraced. Awaken your heart, break your heart all at the same time. Shaping training, if I must, and many of us must, because what you're going to be drawn to do, you're going to do it probably, unless you restrain yourself, hold yourself back, and then that energy is going to try to go someplace else. That desire is going to try to go someplace else. That uncomfortability is going to try to go someplace else. Or we learn to relax right down into the middle of it and watch how it transforms itself. Now, when you start to see how things transform themselves, you're not training or shaping yourself so much in those moments, but you're beginning to see the nature of what you are. As I was talking about last week, there's the cultivation of experiences, which in a way never ends. It's just cultivation, 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 keep cultivating. Or there's looking into the nature of things. cultivation. That's shaping and training. Looking to the nature of things. The only way we become free from that which binds us is to see the nature of that which binds us. When you see the nature of that which binds you, you see what you really are. And what you really are is hidden until it's not. And what you really are is undisturbed. And it's right in this room. And it's not like some people have it and some don't. Every human being has the nature of undisturbed. Undisturbed? Undisturbed. It's funny because when you feel that pull of the truth, you just relax, you're just sitting, and you feel a kind of a fulfillment just coming. And sometimes it arises as a sense of not needing to do anything. Moments of liberation from wanting. Liberation from resistance. Liberation from reaction. Liberation. It's a sense. Or taste. Of resting. Now, it's fine to go on cultivating and shaping your love handles if you want. But what you realize is it doesn't make any difference. And it doesn't matter. And if you do it, you do it more and more for fun. What really struck me about this woman from the Congo is that she would speak to people, and she would speak in a way that was so incredibly impassioned that people would just start crying in the audience and come up and embrace her because the story is so incredibly real. And she had so many different stories. She could just pull any story she wanted. And it was just so deep and profound. About freedom, about forgiveness, about joy, about happiness, about love, about interconnectedness, about racism, about refugees. I mean, she could touch any topic she wants to and just nail it with truth. Because she's seen it. No problem. She had nothing to hide. When you're that open, because another way that we get open, not the best, another way we get liberated, strangely enough, is through being traumatized. Anybody in this room not been traumatized? We're not going to go into talking about it tonight, but at some point we might want to. Never really done that here. Talk about how I've been wounded. Talk about how others have hurt me. Talk about how I've hurt myself. Talk about how I still might hurt myself. Maybe talk about how I hurt other people. We won't do it tonight. At some point we might want to. We might have feelings about, I don't want to talk about that stuff. I don't want to talk about that. I want to forget that. You can't really forget something until you forgive. Try to just forget about it, you'll end up repressing it. And then you'll sit and meditate, and your back will start getting tight, and your shoulder will get tight, and your mind will be like this, and it'll twist and turn. And you'll feel conflict. You wonder where that comes from, do you? Do you wonder where that comes from? It comes from inside. It comes from your storehouse. And because you're not doing anything else when you're meditating, you're not distracting yourself, you're not watching the tube, your attention begins to recognize that which is here latent. And if I think this is not right, now I'm judging it. This shouldn't be happening, now I'm judging it. I don't like this, now I'm judging it. I don't want this, now I'm judging it. I think I'll stop. I think I'll stop looking. Now I've moved away from myself. You can't see what you are until you stop running from your life. And to stop running from your life, what I call finding the pause button on habitual automatic living, leads up to where you find eventually the stop button. And the stop button pushes itself. You don't have to even push it with your finger. You might feel as if you need to learn where the pause button is. You need to find how to pause. How to not be on automatic pilot. Do you know what I mean by automatic pilot? Kind of going through the motions, and then at the end of the day you go, geez, how did this get here? How did I get into this? I tighten my button here, and all of a sudden, oh, this got tight. What happened? I wasn't there when this built up. I was out of touch. I didn't see the arising of this experience that I'm now feeling. It snuck up on me. Now, it looks kind of like a burden at times to take complete responsibility for your circumstance in all ways, but it's actually freedom to take complete responsibility for your circumstance. Total responsibility. Just take your hands and just go. Okay. People call that surrender sometimes. I'd rather just call it the freedom to take responsibility for your circumstance, for everything, including things that other people did to me that left me hurt and wounded. I can take complete responsibility for how that affected me. And through that, it's exactly what this woman teaches, through that, I can authentically, deeply, right from the top all the way down to my toes, I can forgive. Yes, dear.
What do you mean by forgive exactly? Sometimes that word is confusing to me.
Yes, it is. Like the word surrender can be tricky too. Acknowledge to me means, let's say you and I go through something and I feel that you wronged me. Okay? My first entry into that is I acknowledge honestly, experientially, that something has happened. You abandoned me. Right? You cheated me. I mean, you did, but let's just say you did. Okay. You cheat. And I feel resentment. I feel anger through time. That's called resentment. I feel it. Okay? I'm angry at you. I'm hurt by you. I'm at odds with you. See? I'm at odds with you. I'm working through something like this with a friend right now. I'm needing to take space from the time that we spend together, and it's hurting him for me to take this space. I need to do this because of what happened between us. I've told him this. He's hurting because I'm taking space. He wants contact. I'm not available right now. I'm taking care of me. I'm going to work this through. I acknowledge that we have something. I acknowledge that I have something. I need to be clear. What is mine? Never mind my projection onto you for the moment. What is mine? My hurt, my anger. My disappointment. Then I can begin to accept that. Second step. I can begin to accept that. That's different than acknowledge. Acknowledge, I just say, yes, this is here. Doesn't mean I've accepted it yet. When I accept it, Daryl, I stop fighting with it. I let it come. I let it bubble. I let it come all the way up. When I've fully accepted it, when I'm fully embraced of it, forgiveness will fall right out of that. I won't have to practice, oh, I forgive you, and then feel my anger still, because I've accepted it fully. Forgiveness is like the cherry on top. To me, this is how I experience it. People would say this in different ways. One of the things the Catholic Church has really done a bad thing with, just one, is they have forced forgiveness on people. You must forgive. Who are you to tell me I must forgive? How dare somebody... Good night. Thank you for the fulfillment piece. You know what I mean? Isn't that arrogant? For somebody to tell somebody else you must forgive? You must forgive your father for treating you badly? And doing this in the name of God? I mean, I don't know about you folks, but I'd like to call confusion out where it's happening. Well intended, all right, give it that. Yeah, well intended. It's confused. Tell me about how forgiveness works before you tell me I should just forgive somebody I'm still pissed at. And show me from your direct experience that you know something about how this works. And if you know that, you're not going to be telling me what to do. Are you? Not in the sort of the way that I see it. I'm not sure how you see it. We don't like to be told what to do, even by people who are very nice sometimes. Like the officer who says, "You were going 60 in a 45. Let me see your license." A little resistance? Other people were going faster than me. Did you see them? They were right in front of me. The guy in the black car, he's gone. We don't like to be told what to do, because we want to do it ourselves. So that's how I see it, Darryl, is that that out of the acceptance, which sometimes takes a while. I mean, I'll have to get back to you on this one with a friend of mine, but I've been working on it for a couple years. I'm not in a rush. I'm going to get it. I'm confident about that. It's going to take what time it takes. It's going to ripen. I love him, and I hate him. You can't get anywhere in this stuff unless you're honest. And sometimes it's hard to be honest, you know. That's why we sometimes need to talk to somebody else. Like, so do you see it like this? And then Bumba says, "Well, no, you might want to think about it like that. If you know somebody and you trust them, you know, and they're not just going to give you their opinion and tell you what to do. You know, easy it is to not help somebody. Give them your opinion. Or a more subtle version of that, give them advice. You know how easy that is in our society? People going around giving advice, giving advice, giving advice. You should do it like this. Every now and then some good advice comes my way. I don't know about you, but every now and then, about once every 7 years. Or so, give or take. The direct opportunity with the meditation is that we stop abdicating responsibility. In other words, we take responsibility. We sit into the middle of our life in a very direct way. And we let what's there come. And sometimes it doesn't feel very good. But the more and more you see this natural peeling of what? Of that which crowds or clouds or covers your fulfillment. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Then you begin to feel a confidence. It doesn't mean you don't utilize other people's support and insights and don't read books that can point at things. But you find a refuge. It's always here. And that refuge has a deja vu quality to it in that it feels like it's actually always here. That's one of its qualities. It's always here, but sometimes so to speak, my mind, my activities, my habits, my responsibility, all that kind of stuff I can do, seems to separate me from that. That deja vu of undisturbedness. And that's your original nature. That's your Buddha nature. That's the Buddha nature. Difficult thing to say about original nature, true nature, Buddha nature, is that no words can capture it. Even if the word is a very nice image of it, it can't get it. It can't get it like the word carpet can work really well for this, or water bottle can work well for this. You can't take a word like original nature, Buddha nature, and point it at something like you can this water bottle. Why? Because that original nature, that Buddha nature, is everywhere. And it's everything. But not in the way that we often see it when we're busy being distracted by what? Watch this. By looking for it. So how do you look without seeking? And one of the ways that happens is you begin to recognize that which is here. Very subtle at first, but more increasingly clear, as the refuge of your life, which is that which is undisturbed. It's not a feeling per se, it's not a sense, it's not a thought, it's not a body sensation. It's a recognition, or an awareness, or an abidance. Can you sense it? Try it in your left tip of your pinky. Can you find undisturbance there? Or maybe the tip of your nose. Find undisturbance. Why would I keep looking for undisturbance, peace, fulfillment, if it's already here? And the reason why I would keep looking for it when it's already here is because I've been told to look for it. I've been encouraged. I've been trained. I've been shaped by others who believed, with the goodness of their heart even, that that's what you need to do in your human life. You need to find the end of the rainbow for yourself. You need to look. You need to travel. If you ever go to a place far away that you're drawn to geographically, and then find that you're in a way exactly the same when you're there as when you were in the other place, then you know what I'm talking about. Now, the circumstances changed, the weather changed, there was more snow. A fellow that I speak with from time to time, he says, there's two places on the planet which are like perfect snapshots of what I really am. And I said, where are they? He said, there's a place in Spain, there's a road, it's an alley, and the buildings are tall, and I'm 22 years old, and I drove there from Germany in my car. And I got to the spot, and I got out of the car, and it was a beautiful, clear day. You know what I mean, Paul. It's perfect blue sky. I'm standing between the buildings. You know how they are, right? You've seen at least the pictures. They're not really perfectly aligned. Why? Because they're beautifully asymmetrical. I'm standing there on that corner between those buildings, and I'm going, snap a photograph of this because it doesn't get any better. So he goes, and then something very similar happens on a street corner in London. Is that the sound? Snapshot. That's it. And life happens, life happens, life happens, life happens. A psychic tells him, I have an image of you. I love people who tell you their image of you. I have an image of you standing on the end of a pier. You don't have a shirt on. The sun is touching your skin. The lake is open, and your arms are wide. You need to find that, because that's who you really are. He's looking for that. Just like he's looking to find the place in Spain again and the spot in London. And he's suffering. And he's depressed. Why? Because he's confused. He's looking for a replication of something that's all about trained and shaped imagery. But that's, God love him, that's the best he can do. And he wants to know more, wouldn't you, if you hadn't found the pier yet? If you knew in your mind you can't go back to Spain or London and stand on the same corner and go, there it is, as if it's in that geographical spot. Well, guess what, my friends? It is in that geographical spot, but only for those who see that it's in every single spot as well. And once you see it's in every single spot, you recognize it has nothing to do with geography. It's that possibility, and we all have it, of resting into the undisturbed nature of what we are. So please don't confuse this with, I want to do some shaping and training. Fine. You get out of shape physically because you don't exercise and you want to get in better shape physically, fine, go ahead and train. Get your obliques down if you want. I just never met anybody who could. The truth is, when Mr. Smith would ask me to put the pinchers on his obliques, actually more often than not, he's a metaphor as well as a literal person, it would be thicker. It wouldn't be thinner. Because that's how it goes. It's supposed to get flabbier. That's how it becomes more beautiful. It's supposed to get wrinklier. The eyes are supposed to become less clear. That's how it becomes more beautiful. We got it backwards. Oh, beauty, this, yeah. And then the models occasionally, the ones who are like, wish it, wanting to push it, instead of being these sticks, they're sticks, my friends. Yeah, it's walking out there. It's like, oh, boy. When was the last time you ate? That silk shirt looks kind of nice, but you don't look so good. And then the models, the ones who push it, you know, they go ahead and they let them fill out a little bit and they don't get fired yet and they walk out like that. People can't stand it. Oh, you can't, how do you, and if you're going to take a stand and say these women are suffering from eating disorder, which they are, oh, you can't say that. That's against us. That's against the system. They're making their own choices. Hush, hush, hush. Oh, you're breaking the status quo. You're breaking the rules. Guess what? Freedom breaks all the rules that the conditioned mind makes. But it breaks them with such benevolence and such nonviolence that we don't even recognize it sometimes. And what I mean is simply this. Undisturbedness is available all the time. I, quote unquote, in my habits and tendencies and patterns and go for it, abandon the peace of the abidance. And it is an abidance of undisturbance. Didn't Jesus say, I want you to have abundance, I want you to have it now? That's what I was taught. I don't know what he said, I wasn't there. But that's what I was told. He said, I want you to have the abundant life, I want you to have it now. He wasn't saying a Mercedes or a bigger house. He was talking about the undisturbed nature of what we are. He was saying the word now. I want you to have it now. Taking apart the teaching that came after him, which was the dualistic split between earth and heaven. Or worse, heaven and hell. And ne'er the twain shall meet, because they're two different worlds. If you've ever been in a hellacious state, and you saw even just a little bit that that state has the power to liberate itself, you find heaven in hell. You find heaven in hell. And that's exactly what this woman from the Congo is able to articulate in her own words, over and over and over, for anyone who's willing to listen. She got her family out of there. She got her parents out of there. She's getting people out of places in the world where they're stuck every single day. Talk about networked. And there's a full integration of what I'm talking about with total service. Some people split this and say, oh, there's nothing to do, just rest in it, non-disturbedness, nothing to do, it doesn't make any difference. No separation between anything, there's no higher, lower, nothing to do, there's nothing to do. I don't know about you, but sometimes I think that's just a negation of the fact that there's plenty to do. I I'll close on this. Another story. Years ago, I met a woman from the former Czechoslovakia, which is now split up. That's what freedom does, or the urge for freedom. It splits countries up. Because who drew the lines around them anyways? Like a little boy, 4 years old, writing to God. Dear God, did you draw the lines around the countries? And if you didn't, who did? Good question. Raised in the former Czechoslovakia. She's drawn to the truth, just like you and me. What's available? Not much. She meets a teacher. And it's a small group of people who are attracted to this teacher, because in order to meet with this teacher, they have to meet in complete secrecy. Why? This isn't that long ago. We're talking like 15, 20 years ago, 25 years ago max. In order to meet in a setting like this and talk the way we're talking, they have to meet in secret. Why? Because if they were found out to be meeting and talking about these things, they'd be killed. No trial. No conversation. Hey, what are you talking about? No, just... Every time she could meet with him, and they'd meet about once a week, they'd have to go off to these secret places and meet, and he'd give teachings, and they'd meditate. There were teachings on the Dharma. She could not go. It's like moth to the flame. You ever watch a moth go to the flame? I got a squirrel on my roof right now in my house. You know how squirrels want to sharpen their teeth? They find things to sharpen their teeth on. If they find plastic, they'll eat your plastic. This squirrel is on my roof right now, maybe right now. And it's metal on this part of the roof. It's a screen porch with a metal roof. And there's a metal thing there. And he's sharpening his teeth on the metal. It's right outside my office window where I type on my computer. So I go out and I yell at him, "Get out of here!" And he runs away. He looks back and he runs away. And then he waits until I'm gone. He comes back. He's going to go through the roof. I've got to do something. That's how conditioned. It's like, that's my spot. I'm going to work on it. Go to the neighbor's house. My mind goes, oh yeah, I'm going to have a heart. Yeah, I got to have a heart. I got one already. I don't even have to buy one. I'll get one up in the attic. I know where it is. Have a heart. Save the squirrel instead of putting him in a... And then take him to the neighbor's house. We're further away. I put them out of the neighborhood. And then his brother, Buster, will come. That's you. That's me. Until we realize we don't have to do that. Just relax that hand. Those incisors. Just relax. That's a big job sometimes. Just relax. This woman wanted the truth so much that knowing if she was caught, and it was real risk. It wasn't like, it's Gainesville, Florida, nothing's going to happen. You can criticize the mayor. You can say really loud in the neighborhood you hate the president. You can do a lot of things in this country because we have freedom of speech. We got these amendment rights. She knew that she could be killed every time she went to that meeting, or while she was at that meeting, or when she was leaving that meeting, and there was nothing that could stop her. There's a man in China like this right now. He's a world-renowned artist. This guy is so spot on in terms of the truth, telling the truth. Had a beautiful structure that he built. He's done stuff all over Europe, America. Big structure that he built in China. Big piece of art. He's finally, the government's like, we got to do something about you. They already beat him up once. So they demolished his building when he was on a tour with his artwork in Europe. You know what he did? He came back. He got got all of the people who work with him. They all started filming the destruction, and he claimed it his greatest work of art. This is my greatest work of art now. Thank you. He's incorporating everything. Now he's, you know, after they beat him up, he's laying in the hospital, he's got the IUV, and he takes his little camera, he puts it like this, and he films it for the police in China, and he goes like this. Here you go. Have a look. He's a peaceful being, but he's a freedom fighter. Anybody know his name, by the way? Do you know his name, Bill? Awaya, something like that. It's an interesting name. His mother's very frightened for him. He's like, don't worry, Mom. When it's my time to go, I'll go. Work has to be done. There's people like that all over the planet. They're not just resting in the abidance. They're acting from the abidance. They're acting in nonviolence. They're acting peacefully, fully engaged. So let me pause there. It's a little bit longer than I intended to go.